Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 84 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and as always, I've got Johnny with me.
What's up, Tristan? What's up, guys? Hope everyone's doing well.
Yeah, man. We've got our first Olympic gold medalist. We've had a few Olympians, but we're going to take the show to a new level. Going to get some insights from Stephanie Rice, my man.
Yeah, that reminds me. I owe another shout-out to Lord Shanahan, because a few episodes ago, you and I were conversing about, man, did we have we've had Olympians on, but did we have any gold medalists? And he actually took the time to send us. He was like our statistician. He sent us those stats.
And this is 2 days after he's had a baby, so yeah, congratulations, Ben.
Dude, this dude's a savage. What's his real name?
Ben Shanahan.
Okay, yeah, thanks for that, Ben. But yeah, today we got Stephanie Rice, 3-time gold medalist. At the time, she was a world record holder. What events did she dominate, Tristan?
She was in the medley, so I think it's that. She's in freestyle and medley. So medley, I think, is when you do all the strokes in one race.
Yeah, man. So multi-talented.
Backstroke, breaststroke, freestyle, and there's one I'm missing.
Yeah, man. Were you a good swimmer?
Nah, hell no. I was a terrible swimmer.
I'm awful. Like, I sink.
I could save myself, but I'm never going to win a race. Definitely not.
I like to think that if I needed to, I could survive, but I just never feel comfortable in the water.
Put your hand up, man.
Yeah, man. I think where I come from, people, young bucks from Ohio, you know, we're meant to be playing, you know, sports on a field.
It's not a lot. There's a few lakes there, but not really water, right?
A huge Great Lake, but yeah, not a lot of water. So also, Stephanie, now you said she's been on a few different reality shows here in Australia.
Yeah, she won The Apprentice, I think it was. Celebrity Apprentice with Jeff Fennick and all sorts of people.
Jeff Fennick, name drop, Vision Big Board Jeff. Alum, what's up?
Big Jeff.
Yes, sir. But,
she won that. So interesting to see, because she was in a bit of a transitional phase. So I think that'll be part of what we are talking about today, like, I think that's going to be a main focus, kind of how she's transitioned from the pool to the business world.
For sure, man. I know you've done it. It's happened to me. Everyone listening at home, it's a part of life, transitioning from one phase to another. And I feel how smoothly, or maybe the people around us, that is the important part of that transition to help us. Because it's really tough when you go through these, especially coming from a dominant athlete like that and then having that career come to an end.
Yeah, I agree. And at such a young age too. So when you think about it, you know, the first thing you do in life, especially for someone like herself, is a professional swimmer.
Yeah.
And virtually what she knows and she's been really good at, it literally finishes by the time you're, what, in your mid-20s. So a lot of people, I think this probably, for her, I think she's great because she's entered the fitness and wellness world and she's helping people in other avenues and using her strengths from before to create a life after. Because I think a lot of athletes struggle with that fact, that transition from being the celebrity, the highest paid player in the team, all that sort of stuff, where, you know, between the ages of kind of 18 to 30, they're on top of the world. And then once they retire, it just changes, you know what I mean? No one wants anything to do with them anymore.
I feel also in a sport like swimming, for Stephanie to represent not only herself, her individual brand, but her country, after that competitive, you know, that competitive side comes to an end, it's almost like a duty now to give back after that playing career, after that competitive career is over. So I'm interested to hear, because for me personally, from a personal standpoint, after I stopped playing baseball, it was tough for me to watch the sport.
To watch it, yeah.
I kind of like turned my back on the sport because, you know, you're so invested into something. You invest not only your time, but your spirit, your heart. And while you're playing and performing, that's your whole world.
Yeah.
And when that comes to an end, you're heartbroken.
Yeah, and I guess for someone like yourself, is, you know, you come to a realization that, you know, we all age and, you know, with age, you know, we do lose a few of our strengths and traits, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
that's how you handle that, I guess, is the person that you really are, because it's just a natural part of being a human being. Like,
yeah,
a 20-year-old and a 35-year-old are just going to have two different bodies types, and I'm sure that she went through that as well. She had a number of injuries towards the end of her career.
In a sport like swimming, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, I know nothing about the sport, I could see it, so I'm pretty sure it's a speed sport, and as we age, as our bodies break down, they say the first thing to go for an athlete is the speed.
Yeah, that's crazy. When you think that, like, I know a few swimmers and they were training and they weren't even at her level and they were training 5-6 hours a day. When you think she's an Olympic gold medalist, she must have been doing 8-9 hours, you know what I mean?
One of my first clients when I moved to Sydney, Australia and started coaching at George Street was a young buck named Dre Williams. Dre, if you're listening at home, man, shout out. Hope you're doing well. He was 19 when I started coaching him, but he literally was just transitioning from a competitive swimming career from the time he was 11. And this kid's work ethic, his mindset in the weight room, and yeah. I was teaching him boxing, his cardio was through the roof.
Yeah, absolutely.
And his headspace was, I would tell him something, he would see it, so he was a visual learner, and then just attack it. So I could, that swimming background, that pedigree of just getting in the water and going, I was able to see it and kind of understand that framework of what a swimmer must have.
Yeah, it's interesting. The competitive athlete, even in the gym today, I've got a couple, but they are so easy to train because they don't argue with you. They don't want to have conversations about it. All they want to do is get it done because they know, they trust you. They put their trust in you to get, like, they come up with their goals. They tell you that goal. You come up with a plan. They follow the plan.
Yeah.
100%. I've not had an issue with any athletes.
Trust is huge, man. Any specific athletes or clients you have you want to give a shout out? Because that's an important facet right there.
Actually, in the lead up to the actual podcast, I had a couple of friends that reached out. So big shout out to Michael McHugh and also Dallas Hall. Dallas used to be in our gym, so hopefully you're doing great and we see your face soon. But I've got a couple of insights from them and some great questions for the podcast ahead.
Yeah, awesome. Likewise, I have a few shout-outs for my clients. Katrina McKenzie, K-Mac, keep killing it. Sarah Mulligan just got married, changed her last name. I'll still call you Malls. And then a new client of mine, Brian Tran. So he just started his own career in competitive dragon boat racing, which I didn't even know it was a sport, but they do it near Darling Harbor. And it looks 18 guys in a boat, guys or girls, and they're just going at it. So
that looks, sounds awesome.
Yeah, we got some good questions to be featured for Stephanie, and I'm excited to get this interview, you know, kickstarted.
Definitely. We'll be checking in with Steph in a couple of minutes' time. Before we log in with Steph, just a big shout-out to everyone that's been supporting the show. We've been getting some awesome messages. So, you know, any feedback that you want to see, any guests, please send them through info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. Please, yeah, if you can, share it with your friends and your family. Remember to subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And please leave us a 5-star review.
Couldn't said it better. I'd like to give it a shout-out. We're actually recording this Facebook Live right now. So Milo Rogers, Kieran Canavan, Dom Davison, John Gambrell, appreciate the feedback. Also, we got to give a shout-out to our sponsors, Onnit. Onnit's been with us since June, since we did that little U.S. tour, visited them there in Austin, Texas. You can check out this company. They're a human optimization brand. Go to our website at www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/onnit. You'll see the products that they represent. You'll see the gym gear, stories behind the products, clothes. I wear a lot of the Onnit shirts. The green one is one of my favorites. And when you're proceeding through the checkout to receive 10% off of all of your purchases, use code word VISIONBOARD.
Definitely. Get in there, guys. I use the Alpha Brain. I've just run out. I've
good got stuff.
I'm waiting for my package to come, so I'm waiting for that. And I've stored a few Warrior bars left, and I love using them on a Saturday when I'm on the run. But before that, also, we've got our free ebook, guys. Quick download on our website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. And we've just come up with our abs.
Ab game on point, Tristan.
Abdominals and our core strength work that me and Johnny go through each week. So I think that's both of our strengths. So I'm using it pretty. I do a lot of sparring now, so I kind of want to get that caught up because I'll get dropped otherwise.
It's all, dude, our strength, whatever we're doing functionally, strength, it all comes from the core.
Yeah, 100%. It's that kind of base, you know. You can't build a, like I always say, you can't build a house without a foundation.
For sure.
Your core is your foundation.
Look at all the great fighters. We'll stick to boxing. And just, when you think of like the best of all time, you think of six packs and just power and movement. Also, that strong core allows them to move at different angles and be able to recover and get out of bad situations better.
Absolutely. Have a look. I think a perfect example is probably Floyd Mayweather. When you think he's got brittle hands.
Yeah.
To brittle hands, you've got to compensate that somehow. And
that in and out
have
movement.
A look at his movement, and that comes from his core. And if you look at what his physique is, when you think about he fights at his walking weight, he looks brilliant. Like, not a lot of people can fight at their walking weight and look that ripped.
Guys. And it's simple to download, man. Like Tristan said, our website, put your email. We'll send it right to your inbox. It takes 10 seconds.
Yeah, definitely, guys. So thanks for tuning in. And we've got Steph right ahead. So here is Stephanie Rice. All right, our special guest is Stephanie Rice. Steph is one of Australia's golden girls of the swimming pool, with her career spanning 3 Olympic gold medals and 5 world records. She's now moved into the business world with a number of ventures, which includes her kids' swimwear line, which is Race Rice, and her iBook available on iTunes, which is Art of Wellness. We welcome Steph Rice. Steph, Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent, Steph. Like Tristan aforementioned, your resume speaks for itself. Could you share with your fans and our fans listening a little bit of insight into what your life is like currently in terms of maybe business, entrepreneurialism? What are you into right now?
Yeah, well, I guess my life has changed a lot since I was swimming. You know, swimming and training for the Olympics is so regimented. Every day is the same. Every week looks exactly the same, whether it's sort of Christmas time or, you know, middle of the year. So it's real. I really enjoyed since sort of completing my athletic career and stepping into being an entrepreneur. Just every day is quite different, and I enjoy the variety that comes with that. In saying that, I really do try and keep some type of routine and consistency with exercise and eating healthy foods and meditating and things like that that I'll do wherever I am in the world. But I guess when I was swimming, I just couldn't take time to do exciting adventures and opportunities. Like I was just at the cricket yesterday, you know, working with that Cricket Australia, and to be able to get off work on a Wednesday or a Thursday and be at a pool for the cricket, like I could never do that when I was swimming. So that was awesome. I love that I can do things like that now, and just trying to take, I guess, like a lot of the skills that I learned through swimming, you know, and persistence and dedication and having goals that I'm transferring into living a business life.
Steph, when you were, you know, winning the gold medals and then transitioning into your life, what it is now, is there any did you have any sort of, you know, coaching or somebody in your circle talking to you like, Steph, you're representing Australia even after you retire? You like, is it like a duty that you feel intrinsically that you constantly have to keep creating and, you know, constantly giving back to the community? Was there any guidance with that, or is this something that you had to learn on your own?
Yeah, you definitely have to learn it on your own. There's really not like a lot of, I guess there's programs available to once you finish, you know, you're an athletic career and life after sport, but honestly, there's really not a lot of energy that went into it from people following up and helping you and stuff like that. I really had to initiate a lot of those things on my own. And I think the hardest part of the whole transition was everyone asking me every day, what do you do now? Like, what are you doing now? And I was like, I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't thought about it because I've just been so focused on, you know, like going to the Olympics and trying to achieve my goals in sport. So I never allowed myself to think of what I would want to do after sport. I didn't ever really have like a backup plan. So I guess that I just had to really take the time, which is honestly why I moved to LA, just to get out of Australia and away from everyone who, I guess, I felt people were asking me stuff. So at least when I was in LA, I wasn't getting those types of questions. People didn't know me. And I could just go through my own type of, I guess, like spiritual journey to figuring out what the next phase is and who Stephanie Rice is outside of swimming. And I think that's why so many athletes struggle post-sport, is because they don't really know who they are away from all the external gratifications of being good at sport. You sort of don't really know what you stand for as a person. And that's really what I took the time to figure out.
Steph, is that something you enjoy doing now with all the travel? Because I see you've just come back from India, and like you said, you lived in LA for a while. You lived in Sydney too for a while too, didn't you?
Yeah, I lived in Sydney for a couple of years, moved from there to America, and then now I'm currently back in Brisbane. But I travel a lot. I love traveling. It gives me so much more perspective. Like, for example, like you were saying, I was just in India. I did all the commentary for India for the Olympics, and, you know, going to India is so eye-opening, and I just constantly feel gratitude for the life that I have here in Australia, and just little things like fresh air. It just puts everything in perspective, and I love travel for that kind of experience that it gives you, and it's important for me to constantly, I guess, take myself out of my comfort zone and do things like that.
Yeah, definitely. What about, you just mentioned a couple of really key words there, spirituality and also gratitude. Was that something that you kind of have just learnt after post swimming, or is that something that's always been important to you?
I think I've just become more aware of it since post-swimming, because sport is incredibly selfish, which, you know, it has to be in order to do well. You have to be able to you know, focus purely on yourself and have everything revolve around how you feel, your training, you know, what you're eating, all those things. And so I think since finishing sport, I've just realized, you know, wow, how grateful I am for everyone supporting me to do that and kind of giving up, like, for example, my mom, you know, giving up so much of her time and energy to help me go after something that I wanted to go after. So I just have complete gratitude for those things. I have so much more gratitude for being a female and being able to go after a career in sport, because they're few and far between and not a lot of female athletes can make an actual career out of their sport, you know, financially and through opportunities and business ventures. So I feel really grateful for a lot of that, and I think a lot of that has come through my spiritual evolution and figuring out, you know, that spiritual path, like what I actually really want to do, why am I here?
Yeah, Steph, Tristan and I use this platform to, we talk a lot about intent, and for our listeners, our fans, you know, preach the importance of having that pathway, having that understanding of what our strengths are, and help us identify those steps in that path. With yourself, with one of the questions, we talk about having an invisible tool belt. So basically things that we know we walk around with that allow us to continuously grow and evolve. Could you share a little bit about how you're wired and maybe some characteristic traits that you possess that allow you to continually reach your full potential?
That's a really good question. I think that the things that I know made me successful as an athlete were having a burning desire to do something and continually grow and learn. And I always have embraced challenges or setbacks or, you know, discomforting times as an opportunity and a real chance to take a look at how I'm feeling, what I'm doing, and assess why. And I think the question of always asking myself why has really helped me to learn and grow, because, and then also taking those like maybe setbacks and using them as like real fuel for progression and growth. So I think I've always had a desire to really feel like I'm contributing and that I've come, you know, to Earth in this lifetime to do something special, and I will want to know that I leave knowing I could have done everything I possibly could. And I think when I was swimming, I never really thought about everyone else. I was just so busy thinking about me.
Yeah.
So I guess that fuel, it's the same fuel, like I had such a desire to, you know, be an athlete and just achieve everything that I thought I knew I could achieve. But now it's like using the same fuel, but using it from a bigger perspective of helping other people and contributing to, I guess, especially people less fortunate than I am, because going to India opened your eyes to that life. And I'm definitely very spiritual, and I think that's something not a lot of people know about me. More than happy to share it, but people are always often surprised at the depth of thought that I have to issues or situations. So that's probably, yeah, just interesting things about me.
Have you ever heard or read any works by the author Eckhart Tolle?
Yes, I love him so much. I have read so many books on spirituality, like big fan of The Secret, Abraham Hicks, Eckhart, like all those books. I love them. The Four Agreements, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that book.
The Power
of Honest.
The Power of Now. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I actually am currently reading Oprah's book, What I Know for Sure, and I find that a real easy one. For people that maybe aren't necessarily too spiritually based or, you know, I guess understand law of attraction and things like that. But it's like it's just a really great book, easy to read, easy to understand, and makes you so appreciative of little things that happen in life and how they're all like stepping stones to where you've got to. But yeah, those are the only books I read. Honestly, I don't read any other types of books.
Have you read, are you familiar with like the Buddhist saying about how he talks about we are all God in terms of how our mindset, how we're wired. We have the power to create our thoughts. Therefore, our thoughts become our reality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know if I necessarily know too much in terms of, you said it was a Buddhist thing?
Yeah, it's more of like a philosophy. So
I think that philosophy follows through in heaps of other ways, like whether you're, like, I guess, any type of religion, or if you're just, I'm not any type of religion. I feel like I'm just more spiritual, holistic. I don't call it a specific thing. I don't call it God. I don't call it Buddha. I don't call it whatever. To me, it's like the universe, and it's like an energy. But exactly those principles are the same. Like, that's the constant, is that we create our futures, we create, like, the thoughts we think determine our reality and our situations. And that's why I think I'm such a why. Like, I ask why all the time, because I think, okay, like, I'm not feeling so good today. A couple of little things have happened to me, a bit of traffic that I was in, like, I was getting frustrated. Why was that happening? Like, what do I need to change in order to change my circumstances? And that awareness and consciousness is something that I really value.
Yeah, there's an awesome, we'll text you after the show, but there's an awesome channel on YouTube. It's called The Journey of Purpose, but they're like 3-minute videos, you know, Les Brown, but there's a guy named Jim Rohn. He's an American entrepreneur.
I've heard of him.
And he has a speech, a 3-minute video called Why? It's excellent. But,
oh, yes, please do. I would love to read those and watch those. That sounds awesome.
But back to visualizing, when you were a swimmer, when you were at the peak of your career, were you going through these mindset, these framework, you know, processes? Like, there's a photo of you online of holding the gold medal, and it's almost like you're absolutely fulfilled, you're culminated. But were you visualizing that moment when you were younger?
Do you know what's so interesting, explaining to you that I guess I only really came aware of, you know, the law of attraction and visualizing and all these things of determining your own success. I only became aware of it after I'd finished sport. But what was so interesting is that I was already using the principles without knowing that I was. So every night before I would go to bed when I was training, I would just, I guess, spend 5 minutes visualizing what it would feel like to be at the Olympics, like what it felt like to stand behind the blocks and hear the crowd. And there would always be good feelings for it. So, for example, I would never visualize myself winning a race or the feeling of what I would feel like when I was swimming. I would always visualize things that I could control. So I could control, like, how I would feel standing behind the blocks. I can't control if I win the race or not. So it was, like, almost, like, not a good feeling thought for me to go to. But I definitely did a lot of that. I did so much of it in training. When I was actually, like, racing things in training, I would visualize my competitor next to me, even if it was a boy who I clearly wasn't going to race against. I'd imagine that they were, like, someone from the States that was my biggest competitor. And you know, what would I do if she was a little bit in front of me? Like, you know, like, just imagining all different types of situations and scenarios. But honestly, by the time I got to Beijing and I was standing behind the blocks at the Olympics, I feel like I'd been there about 17,000 times over.
Yeah,
in my mind before. And that's, since I've had that awareness, I've realized how many other athletes do that, whether they're conscious of it or not, and they're the successful ones. Like, I know Phelps does that. He's done a lot of stories around how he, you know, imagines it, and he pictures in his mind how he wants to feel at Olympics and things like that. And I think it's a huge part of sporting success, or any success, that hasn't really been tapped into, because I think some people think it's a bit like woo-woo, you know, like it's not, there's not enough, like, evidence behind it or something. But it obviously works.
Yeah, I mean, they call it the law of attraction, like the law of gravity. It's a law.
Exactly.
So, you know,
it's
so,
just a law. Yeah. You either, like, I mean, it's not going to change, so you're either using it to your benefit or you're not, really.
Yeah. Steph, I was just curious, in terms of, like, winning and losing, like, you had such a high in 2008 when you won those 3 gold medals at Beijing, and then obviously you copped injuries, and your performance at the 2012 obviously wasn't as great. It couldn't be. In terms of the, you know, that thing of winning and losing, when you started losing, like, how did you handle that? Was there someone in the background helping you out, or is it just something that you just had to come to terms with?
I think it's, I guess, like, for maybe, you know, outsiders, when they look at a career, they look at, you know, an Olympics, and I either won at the Olympics or I didn't win, which in everyone else's mind is a lose. But I mean, every race that I've done throughout my career from the age of sort of 7 through to 24, I didn't win every race. So yeah. you get used to, I guess not used to the feeling of not winning, but that is a part of a journey. And that's like just being realistic is that you're never going to win every race that you swim in. You're never going to feel awesome every time you race. And that's a big part of like training and learning how to deal with those situations. Because, so for example, in Beijing, I did the first race. I won my first gold medal at the Olympics and broke a world record. And then I got really sick and I had a head cold. My chest was tight. I was coughing. I just had no energy. And I had the final of my 200 medley, which was the second event. And I was distraught, like an emotional wreck.
Yeah.
That I'd trained so hard for 4 years to make everything so perfect. And like the day it needed to be executed, I just wasn't feeling right. And those are when you draw on the experiences of other races that you haven't felt good, or other times in training where you haven't felt good. And like to have won a race knowing I definitely physically wasn't at my best proves how much of sport is mental. And I think that's where I've relied on all the visualizing and all of that work that you do mentally to prepare yourself to, I guess, be able to handle any type of situation. So I never looked at losing or not winning a race as a bad thing. It's more of like, okay, you take so much more insight from races that you didn't win than races that you did win. And it's just important to constantly use that feedback. Why didn't it go as well? Why didn't I do my best time? Why didn't I feel good? What do I need to change to prepare myself to be better next time? And go through the emotions of it. So, yeah, every race honestly has different feedback, and it's just important to constantly use that.
Yeah, I'm really glad you actually brought up that mental game, because we interview quite a number of boxers, and they talk about getting into a bit of a flow state where they're in such a zone that they don't even remember the fight. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, we call it autopilot. Like, that's what we used to call it when we would train. You do things over and over and over and over, so it's not a thought process anymore. And people do it driving. Like, that's the easiest one for people to relate it to. Like, how many times have you been driving to, say, work that you go to all the time, and sometimes you get out of the car and you're like, oh, like, I don't really feel like I remember actually driving here.
Yeah.
Like, sort of became a bit of a blur. Like, you were conscious, but you're not necessarily thinking, oh, this street and then this turn. That's why athletes practice and train so often, is to get into that flow state, that autopilot mode where it just happens and you don't think about it. And then you can get out of your head and into your body and just kind of be with it happening. Because as soon as you overthink something, you really kind of set yourself into a state of not performing, because you're just overanalyzing and overthinking.
Yeah, I'm glad the story you told about you weren't at 100% in Beijing during that last race and how you performed because of the preparation. There's a famous story about Michael Jordan. They call it the double nickel game. He scored 55 at the Garden, and he had, I think he had a temperature of like 103. And he gave an interview after that, and he said, the reason why, you know, I always play my best when I feel the worst, because I outwork everybody in practice. So
exactly.
If you had to identify something now that you do better than your competitors when you were competing in the pool, what was that?
Well, the reason that I won 3 gold medals at the Olympics, I mean, that's not a fluke. And people think it's arrogant to say that, but it's not. I mean, you only have to look at Rio Olympics, where, you know, Australian media was gearing up for the fact that, you know, we were going to win all these medals, and we had world record holders, and like, little to none performed in all sports. And it's mental. It's not performance. They all have trained well. They're all on target physically, but mentally something's not working for us as a whole team. And that's, I think, something you need to address. Like, rather than criticizing it, you need to address it. And the reason that I won the 3 gold medals was because I was mentally more prepared than everyone else there. And I could confidently stand behind the blocks in every race and look to my left and look to my right and know, like, not hope that I was better, but know I had done more work. I was more prepared. I was more ready. And, like, bring it on, rather than like, oh shit, like, you know, like, I hope that everything goes well for me, you know, I think I've done enough. Like, then you're worried. Like, that's a fear-based energy rather than a, like, some type of positive fueling. And I got that from all the extra stuff I did at training, like the amount of times that we would train in a team and in a club, and everyone would leave after practice and I'd be there for another 45 minutes, another hour doing push-ups and dry land exercises, or like get me over one more 100 for time. Like, I was always the one to initiate it, and that's what my coach and I, like, I think we had such a good rapport, was that extra hard work and the extra dedication that went into it. And because it was fueled by me, it wasn't someone like, you have to do more. I wanted to do more, and that was why I won. Yeah. And so those things, I guess, are things that I take now into, you know, my career as a businesswoman, and I just think of those times to positively fuel me, because it's easy when you're, like, now in business. I don't have anything to necessarily show for my hard work over the past 2 years yet, because it's all been in the pipeline. And that's like training. Like, you don't always have an Olympics every year. You kind of training year in, year out. No one really cares what you're doing or notices, and come to Olympics, everyone now cares and wants to know. Yeah. And it's your time to use it and really shine. And so I guess I sort of take not needing a lot of gratification all the time, because we often have that as swimmers. You know, people don't really care for 3.5 years, and then they care about the Olympics.
Yeah. What was it like inside camps? Because you came through in a golden age of swimming when you had, you know, Grant Hacker, you had Ian Thorpe, Amy Sullivan, you had, you know, the list goes on, even on Liesl Jones, you know, yourself.
Exactly.
Like, you all came through together. How tight was it in there? Like, did you share ideas? Did you train together? What was that side like?
Oh, honestly, I feel such gratitude for being a part of that era. And I really was so fortunate to just flick on the back of it. And I say that for a number of reasons. I think there's a certain energy that was surrounding swimming in Australia, and having people like Thorpe and Grant and Libby and Liesl all there at the same time. It was like, so swimming was so high, and it's not anymore, because we don't really have that sort of, I guess, more of a leadership position. Like, there's no real, like, inspirational swimmers. Like, I don't mean to be judgmental, but there's no Thorpe right now.
And I know what you're saying, because I think the cricket team suffers from it as well, because they've gone from a stage of having Warney and Glenn McGrath and Gilchrist and all these superstars. No disrespect to guys like Steve Smith or David Warner or anything that. But it just doesn't seem that they've got the same character.
But it's exactly, and that's exactly what I mean by the swimming team at the moment, or I guess probably in the past couple of years. And that doesn't mean that people that are currently in the team will not have that. It's just, it's like a certain, there's a certain person, and those people don't come around all the time. Like, you're not going to see a Usain Bolt come around in 1 year's time. It sort of like always flows in and out of having ebbs and flows in a sport or in an athlete that brings the sport level up. And I think I'm just fortunate to have been in a time where there was not just Australian swimmers doing well, but, you know, the international scene is hot, like Phelps and Lochte and, you know, all these people. It's like swimming was hot. And to be a part of that, you feed on the energy of it. And I guess that's something I just have more gratitude for. And especially when you look at it from business side, I never did swimming to, like, make money from it. It wasn't a business decision. And if it was, it'd be the stupidest one ever, because your odds are, like, 1 to 1 billion of making money. Because, I mean, if you don't win, like, no one cares.
Yeah.
Like, and people think second is a fail. So it's quite brutal. And so I guess I just feel more fortunate for the fact that, A, I was able to win, and B, that it was at a time where swimming had money in it. It was really recognised. It was an inspirational thing worldwide, not just in Australia, and that I was a part of a sport that had both male and females, like, on the same level.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of sports that where a female athlete will get a similar recognition or financial compensation for a gold medal as a male. And so I guess those things I didn't realize at the time, but now I have so much more gratitude for the fact that I got all that, or that came with all the hard work.
We hope you're enjoying the episode with Stephanie Rice. Be sure to check out our other episodes with the likes of Jonathan Thurston, Anthony Mundine, Evander Holyfield, Mario Andretti, and many, many more. Please subscribe to the Vision Board podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and please leave us a 5-star review. Now back to the show.
Hey, Steph, another good word you used before was leadership. And I just wanted to get you your opinion because, you know, you've had, like you said, like all these high-profile and absolute superstar people just around you, plus your coaches and things like that. In terms of traits that you see in a good leader, even in the business world today, what traits do you see in a good leader?
I think the one that I have most appreciation for now, and something that I've probably gone through, is I felt it when I was swimming and then I didn't when I finished, and I'm trying to build it back, is any good leader doesn't try to impress other people or seek other people's approval for what they're doing. And it's like a confidence and a knowingness in what you're doing is going to cause ripples or discomfort. People are going to judge it because you're not doing things to a mediocre, standard, middle-class level. And I think when you step out and you really have impact and change in the world, you have to be able to handle or cope with people not necessarily agreeing with you, but you stand really strong in your values of it. So when I was swimming, I never cared what people wrote about me in the papers or whether people thought I wasn't going to swim well. That none of that ever bothered me because I knew what I was doing was right. Mm-hmm. But then when I stepped out of swimming and went into, I guess, trying to figure out what do I do now, who am I, what do I love, I definitely took on, like, I was asking more people what they thought of things, and then I was getting caught in the fact of trying to impress other people and do what they wanted me to do rather than listening to really what I want to do. And now I'm just really coming back into trying to find my own personal power place where you are a leader because you're doing what is right for you, and then that lifts everyone else. Like, rather than trying to impress everyone, if you do what is right, you inspire others, and then you can lift them through you being, I guess, so vibrant and like being a real shining light, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love the chat about leadership. It was before I got, Tris and I are both coaches down here in Sydney, Australia, but I used to teach for a leadership company, and we used to have a saying that the best leaders lead with their ears. And, you know, when I was younger, I used to think that, you know, I had to be the loud one, or I had to be the best at football, or the best playing baseball, that sort of thing. And then the older you get, you kind of realize that that's just ego.
You can't learn exactly. If you're talking.
Yeah, you can't learn if you're talking. That's exactly right.
Exactly. And that's, like, I guess where I sort of, like, all those things sort of flow into, I guess, my point on it, too, in being, like, you don't worry about what other people are doing. Like, just do what you know is right. And then that will kind of have that same effect. But any leader that is inspirational in my eyes is just so confident in what they're doing. And that inspires me because I'm like, wow, you're doing your thing and you know it's your thing. And I want to have some of that. Like, I want to feel a part of that.
Yeah, and inspiration is definitely infectious. And I think I think that's a sign, that's a maturation thing as well. When we're younger, like, for instance, when I was younger, my early 20s, and I would see somebody doing well and I wasn't on my path, sort of
be
thing.
Jealous, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd be a hater. I was the biggest hater. And
right, exactly.
And then you get to a point where when you could wake up and you see that somebody doing really well, and like you said, Steph, you want a piece of that. You go home and you're like, all right, what am I good at? What are my strengths? How do I get a piece of that? I think that's a sign of maturation.
I agree. And I think a lot of people just aren't surrounded by it. Like, you guys would probably feel fortunate that you work in sport and that there is, like, an environment and an energy about a team that you kind of can lift. You know, there's many times where I walked into the pool and I did not want to be there for training. Like, I felt like crap. My friends were all going to an event or something, I couldn't go. But when you get to the pool or you get to a team and everyone else is like lifts you in, you just can't help but rise to that energy level of a team. And vice versa, if you're lifted and you walk into a team that's low and no one wants to be there, you can't help but fall into that energy wave as well. So now that I do things on my own, like every day I spend pretty much at home, I work from home, I'm in my little office, I don't have a lot of people around me, I have to create that energy through listening to audiobooks, watching YouTubes, reading books. I, like, have to make sure that I take that time to be surrounded by inspiration because I'm not necessarily physically surrounded by it.
You brought up creativity, and that's something I'm extremely interested in right now. And you said you meditation. The one thing I enjoy, the type of meditation that works for me, I talk about it a lot on the show, is isolation tanks, the sensory deprivation tank. Have you tried this?
No.
Are you familiar with it?
No. Explain it to me.
So the sensory deprivation tank, it was created in the 1960s by a doctor named John C. Lilly, but he was looking for ways to treat cancer without medicine. So what it is it's a tank filled with magnesium, and it's up to your knees.
Yeah.
So it looks like an old school tanning bed. It looks like a catacomb
okay.
a little bit. So the goal here is to strip your body of the five senses. So you're floating in water. That's your body temperature. So you don't need your touch. It's completely dark, so you can't see. You have your earplugs in, so you can't hear and you don't taste. And what begins to happen is you achieve a deep state of meditation through the secretion of, I'm getting really hippie here, dimethyltryptamine, which is in our pineal gland, which secretes when we dream. But studies have shown that it's super beneficial for creativity.
This is those baths, right? That you float in?
Yeah, it's a float tank.
Yes. Okay, I've only just heard of this over the past months, but I didn't know that it had all this, like,
all right,
I knew it was, like, good for relaxation, but not,
oh,
like, as deep meditation and all those effects. So, yeah, I'll definitely read up on that.
I'll email you the ebook I did on it. It's just a simple five-step thing if you've never floated, what to expect. But, yeah, also the benefits as well. 1 hour in the tank is equivalent to 8 hours of rest. So,
yeah, wow.
Yes, so you get out of the tank and you literally feel like a backpack of bricks has been released and your body's transparent now and your perspective on things have changed. I do it every Sunday in Bondi. You should look if you're living in Brisbane. I'm sure there's a float center near you.
They do have a couple in Brisbane. I definitely am going to look into it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I struggled with it, and we had Commando Steve come in last week, and he grilled me on getting back in the tank. Because I got a bit of anxiety from it, and he says the only way to fix it is
normal.
Yeah, the only thing to do is
would be like claustrophobic.
Well, I did research because my girlfriend, she would use that excuse of being claustrophobic. Less than 5% of the whole world's population actually has claustrophobia. It's just one of these things that we attach ourselves to, but. Yeah,
I don't think I would have claustrophobia. I think I would love it.
you got to get involved.
I think also because I love being in the water, and that's honestly, like, so funny that you're bringing this up because it's, like, making me think of things, but when I finished swimming, I started getting anxiety, like, and I don't really like to label myself as having anything because I don't believe in that, but I believe you create everything, you know, so... I was noticing, like, I was getting, like, more frustrated or, like, a little bit anxious, fear-based around things, and I didn't know why. And then I went swimming, like, because I didn't want to swim at all for, like, months and months and months after I stopped. And I just went to the pool one day and I started swimming, and I was like, man, I've missed this feeling. And I didn't realize how much swimming is so meditating, and I was doing it 5 hours a day. So, of course, when you stop, you're going to have, like, some type of, like, whoa, we're not getting this 5 hours a day where you're not talking to anyone, you're in flow state and moving, you can't hear anything, you know what I mean? You're, like, weightless. It's, like, the best time for your mind to just let it drift and go to wherever it wants to go. And I just wasn't getting any of that type of meditative feeling. So I feel like I would love floating because I love those feelings of being totally at peace and out of it, like, out of your head and just in flow.
Yeah, there's an awesome write-up called The Floating Ape Theory, and it's about our most primitive state of consciousness actually happened before we were born, when we spent 9 months in our mother's womb. And this state, while we're in sensory deprivation, you have all types of, like, suppressed thoughts that you forgot happened or memories that you just blocked out that are now put to the forefront that you're able to identify with and let go of. And now you have, like, more space to think. And so every time I go, I bring my journal. As soon as I get out of the tank, I'll have ideas for, like, the podcast, ideas for where to go with a new product, things like that. And somebody who's, you know, pushing the limits is yourself. You know, I'm a big fan.
You know what? So I love all your ideas because I'm all about trying things and seeing if they work for you. And I think what's really interesting is people don't want to be out of their comfort zone. Like, people sort of feel like, ooh, I don't know if I don't like this.
Yeah.
But it's because you're saying it's bringing up things that you, like, need to address or need to, like, actually think about and resolve to be able to let go and move on. And I think that's so interesting that it makes you go there. It makes you kind of feel it all. And then journaling, when you get that creative flow, I always keep a journal next to my book, and I always do like a 5-minute journal or gratitude list after I meditate, because it's when I'm in most, I guess, like stillness in my mind. And I get lots of great ideas during that time as well.
I think it's huge writing things down. Like, it's something me and Johnny do all the time. And, you know, we've got some great success over the last couple of years just doing that, just our thoughts on paper.
Doing that.
Yeah.
And there's something really significant. We used to write all our goals out on paper as well. And there's something really significant, I think, about, I don't know what it is neurologically, but when you write, the feeling of you actually writing it down and, like, not typing it, actually writing it, and then visually seeing it and, like, knowing that it's there and you can continue to see it. There's something really powerful in doing that. And not a lot of people will actually write it down. Like, they'll have like, oh yeah, I want to lose 5 kilos.
Yeah.
Write the thing down. Like, write it down and commit to it. Don't just sort of think it in your mind.
For sure. Harvard did a study about that, about people. They studied three different groups. The one group had an idea and they just kept it to themselves. The other one had the idea, they wrote it down. And the other one had the idea, they wrote it down and they told somebody about it. And the percentage, I think it went from, like, if you just have an idea, it's like less than 2% that you're going to take action. If you have the idea and write it down, I think it goes up to 10%. But if you have the idea, write it down and tell somebody about it, your chances of taking action go up to 80%.
Yeah, I would totally believe that.
Yeah, accountability is huge. Remember I did mine, I put mine on my blog.
For sure.
And I smashed all mine within 5 months, only because I was out there in
public.
That's
amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. But it was just like, it was just out there. So I had to do it. I had no choice.
Yeah. Hold on.
You know what's really interesting? You know how you've been saying, like, creative, like that's your word right now that you're really interested in?
Yes.
Accountability is my biggest one right now.
Oh, it's huge.
And I feel like it's so undervalued in society. People don't take any accountability for things anymore.
Oh, my.
Like, very rare. And it frustrates me. And I think that there's, like, so much to be said about owning up to things, like, and really taking ownership for good things and bad things. And the way I view it is, if you're not happy to accept the fact that you maybe screwed up or you did something that wasn't the best that you could do it, own it. And then when you do something that's amazing and can be praised for it, like, then you can own that as well. But don't expect me to praise you for something if you're not happy to take the good with the bad, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think, especially also when, you know, we're hanging, the people we choose to surround ourselves with, our circle of influence, I think the accountability is attached also to, like, self-integrity, our moral compass.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's so, once you're at that stage, you know, that thought process or that awareness, it's easy to identify these things in the people around you. I think it's really important.
I agree. Oh, yeah, and culling is the best thing you can do. Culling your wardrobe, culling your friends, culling the things you listen to. I'm all about it. I love it.
Oh,
yeah. Who's in your circle of influence now, Steph?
Oh, honestly, I've always been someone that's only had about 5 friends that I actually really spend my time with, share my energy with fully. And some of them have been through, like, childhood. Other ones have come in through business. And they're people that are really special to me. And it's so interesting because I think if I ever got married, all my best friends don't know each other.
Oh,
like,
wow.
They don't revolve in the same circles. And I love that because
that's
someone
good. Like,
that,
you'll be at your hen's party and, like, they'll all get to know each other.
Everyone, I mean, everyone. It'll be like a whole, like,
they all know about each other, but they don't know each other.
Yeah. They all know about each other. They just have never met each other. But I like it because if I'm struggling with something in business, I have, like, 1 or 2 friends that I would call about that. Where if I'm struggling in something, like, personally or in a relationship, there'd be, like, 1 or 2 friends I'd call about that.
Yeah.
And I like that. They're in different areas and they all serve me in a different way. And I obviously serve them in some way as well.
Yeah.
So I love that equal energy exchange of a friendship.
I'm pretty similar with my best friends, and I think it's because I'm very similar to you in the fact that we've traveled a lot, and I've got best friends in different cities, in different countries, and a lot of them know about each other, they've never met.
Yep, Yeah, yeah, I love that. I've never been the type of person that had, like, a school group, and then the group stayed together after school. I don't hang out with people in groups. I'm not a fan.
I like talking to everyone.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to everyone, but I'm not, like, a best friend group person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's dangers in everyone having the same dogmatic belief system on everything. We all eat the same thing. You know, there's whole cities where I come from, the United States. There are whole, like, villages of people who dress alike, think alike, do the same things, and continually just act as if, you know, like, a base level sort of mindset. Because, you know, it just like positivity is infectious, so is being average, and so is being, you know.
Also, yeah, and that is my greatest fear. To be average, because it's the worst place you can be. It's like, I would rather be on the street, like, broke, than be average, because to me it's like, average has so much security. You know, you're kind of like, oh, it's okay, like, you don't necessarily want to change, and I hate that. That mentality is not for me, whereas I'd rather be like, oh, shit, I have to make a change. This is not, like, I can't stay on the street. Well, yeah. And then you just push forward.
Inspiration through desperation.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Steph, because we had Anthony Mundine on the show, and what he said was he loved this quote, and it was where are the most dreams in the world kept? And the answer is the cemetery, because people just they die with their dreams. They don't want to go outside of their comfort zone to actually take a chance in their life. So it's quite interesting.
And that's really sad to me. I think I've just always been someone who's followed their dreams, and I will continue to do so. And I hope that through, like, a big part of where I feel so much fulfillment now is being able to do interviews or mentoring workshops and speak with people about encouraging them to do it, because I think sometimes people just need one or two people to believe in them and back them in their ability, and then they feel like they can. And I think that's really hard when you're surrounded by maybe average, where people are like, ooh, just be careful, like, think about this, or make sure, you know, this doesn't happen. Whereas when you get someone that's like, that sounds amazing, like, you'd be really good at that, they feel so good, and then that's all they need is, like, a little inspirational confidence push.
So for anyone listening at home, Steph, is there any, what would you tell them if they're struggling with something, or if they need that one person to give them encouraging words, what would you tell them, since you have the opportunity now to speak to them?
I guess, like, it's for me, it's something that's got to be maintainable. So it can't be me. It can't be, like, you always, like, trying to look at what I do. For me, it's finding that. So I listen to audiobooks. I listen to Tony Robbins. I watch different things where you're constantly surrounded by people encouraging you to be better and encouraging you to go after it and learn about yourself. And for me, when you surround yourself with that, and find it obviously within friends or mentors. And the biggest thing I guess I try and share is ask for help. So many people are willing to help that you have to ask. And I just think a lot of people are scared of asking. And that would be my advice.
That's excellent.
Johnny says that a lot.
I always say that. It's like the rule number one of leadership is it's okay to ask for help. And I feel the people who are unwilling, I think it originates at a unwillingness to be vulnerable. So many.
Yeah, it is. It's a vulnerability.
And that holds so many people back, because they have to live up to a facade or...
Well, so it's a perception. You're worried about your perception of people thinking that maybe you don't have it all together. But I think as soon as you realize that no one has it all together, then you're kind of like, it's okay. Like, I ask for help all the time. I'm always asking for help. And I think there's a difference in asking for help when it's like a desperate energy. Like, please help me. I don't have any money. That's desperate. But when you're like, oh, I'd love your advice. That's a great word. I always use advice. Like, I'd love your advice on this opportunity I'm looking at doing, or if you have any advice on how you got better at this. Yeah. Because then it's not desperate.
And that's what this show is. Tristan and I just celebrated our year doing the Vision Board podcast. And with each interview, like, speaking to people like yourself, and, you know, last weekend, you know, DDP, this gentleman who is a very famous wrestler, like you said, we just get a clear and clear picture of what we're trying to do here, and that's provide a platform for asking for help and then sharing as well. I think that's really important, too.
I think it's, Yeah, sharing is so important. And you can honestly only share once you've done the work on yourself in that area. Otherwise, you sort of, you don't have those insights or the ability to articulate the insights.
Right on.
Definitely. Steph, you've been brilliant. You know it's a great interview and a great chat when you don't realize the time that's gone past. We've been going for 50 minutes, so I've just got to be aware of your time and our time as well. Just a couple of things before you go. I want to speak to you about, is it Race Rice or Race Rice?
Race Rice.
Race Rice.
Race Rice.
Tell me about the business, how it started, and the visions that you've got for it.
Well, it started 4 years ago. It started pretty much when I was rounding up my London 2012 campaign. And I always wanted to design my own swimwear because I always felt like there was, I would have loved to have taken a bit of what this company did and put it with this company and like mesh it all together and make, you know, one style of swimwear that I loved. And that's where it started, was just like wanting to design. I've always been quite creative in that way. I went through a lot of setbacks at the start with people that I was in business with, you know, I guess like the structure of the business and having to start all over again a couple of times. But it's like, I'm so grateful that I had to start over and really, I guess, take pride in the people that I was partnered with. I didn't maybe value that so much at the start, because now I'm doing it on my own and I have total accountability for it. And it's, you know, I guess, there's definitely times where I'm like, ooh, I haven't done enough, but I also am like putting in all the work, so, and all the risk. And it started as just a kids swimwear company, but it really has evolved into just being a kids company, purely for kids. I'll never go into, I guess, adults or teenage stuff. And I, through the journey, things like always pop up, you know, like little universe messages, and I just got the message that there's no healthy kids snacks on the market that don't have chemicals and are LCM bars and full of sugar. So I was like, okay, there needs to be a healthy snack for kids. There's so many things out there for, you know, adults and muscle bars and women's lean bars and all this kind of stuff, but nothing really for kids. And that's so important when they're learning and growing and being active. So created Supercharged bars, which are, you know, another Race Rice product. The swimwear will come in March, and it will, I have no doubt, evolve into being more of a community that I create for kids. And it's a social enterprise, so we give a huge percentage of the profits back to kids that are, you know, struggling and less fortunate than ourselves. And that's where my drive comes from. So the drive originally had nothing to do with social enterprise. It was just about designing swimwear. And as I've evolved and as this has evolved with me, that purpose of giving back and being a part of something so much greater than just myself and just some swimwear, as that's where I get my drive from. And that's where I feel like I'm really contributing to the world and to, I guess, the message of the importance of health and the environment and little things like that. And this is a great way for me to share all those messages.
Where can the people continue to kind of follow that journey on that path there, Steph?
We're just about to launch the website, which is racerice.com, and obviously everything over social. So I'll be starting to fire a lot of that up as we begin to launch right after Christmas. And I'm excited that we're finally in launch. I keep saying where, but it's actually me. But I think it's because I have so many people that are a part of my team in different aspects. You know, I have a web team, I have a legal team, and they're my team.
And then you chat with it with your family and friends, and they're happy for
you. Exactly. I feel like we're all a part of it, and I like that it's like that. But, yeah, definitely you can follow it all over social and online. And I'm just excited to really give back in such a bigger way than I have before.
No, it sounds like an amazing initiative. Steph, just before you leave, we've got one final question. It's a personality question. Now, Steph Rice, you're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got five invites. The only rules are it can't be anyone that's a family or friend member.
Yep.
And it can be anyone dead or alive. Who's Steph Rice inviting?
Well, Angelina Jolie, absolutely number one. Oprah. Tony Robbins. I think I would invite... I don't know who I would choose between someone like a Warren Buffett or
Are you keeping an invite up your sleeve?
Yeah, because like they could maybe come together as like a plus one. I think then I would want to invite someone like there's honestly just so many amazing people doing good things in the world, which is why I say Angelina, because I just love her for that. Marilyn Monroe.
Excellent. Steph, you've been amazing. Like we said, time is super valuable, so we appreciate you sharing this space. The work you're doing with Race Rice, super powerful. So
thank you.
We appreciate
that a lot.
And just leave our fans, you know, maybe the fans in America listening that might not be too familiar with your social media stream, where could they follow you and continue to support your journey?
Yeah, well, you can, I mean, follow it all over social. All of my handles are ITS Steph Rice. And I try and keep that as real as possible. So, yeah, or stephanierice.com. But thank you so much for having me on, and I appreciate you taking the time to ask such deep and inspirational questions. You guys will have an amazing platform.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it, Steph. You've been brilliant.
Yeah, Tristan and I,
you
know, we've spoken to, like, best-selling authors, world champion fighters, and we realized going into this, you're our first gold medalist. So, it's been an asterisk, and on our individual vision boards, we get to cross that off. So, thank you.
Thank you. I'm honored to be the first.
I will speak soon.
Thanks, guys.
What a great episode, man. That was, you know what, two things that I got out of that, because I think it's probably, it might even project where we go with the vision board a little bit more, is that, you know, I know nothing about females, and it's great to get a female's perspective.
Speak for yourself.
That's what I'm doing. I'm speaking for myself.
Right now.
So it's great to get a female's perspective on different areas in life, whether it's business, sports, relationships, lifestyle. It's just good to have something that's different to yourself.
Yeah, see, I have three sisters and my mother, and I've always been I understand your point. I like interviewing and chatting with people who are pushing the limits. So
she ticks that box as well.
Yeah, so guy or girl, it doesn't matter to me, and I know it doesn't matter to you either, but with Stephanie, man, that bit, so many little layers to it, like the awareness bit, visualizing what she's doing with Race Rice. The Race Rice thing, super, super powerful with the children, because as a person with her stature, what she's achieved, what she's done and accomplished, she really doesn't owe anybody anything. But to have this stance on...
She's got something of difference, you know. I mean, she's giving back to the kids, you know.
That's what I mean.
Easily just be...
That's the future, man. Without cliche, the kids will be adults soon.
Yeah, and the cliche kind of, when you're a superstar, is either you become a media star or you start coaching at a really high level. Do you know what I mean? It's good to see that she's going back to the grassroots.
Or you just disappear into obscurity. Yeah.
For example, you've got world champion friends that have been the best of their games.
And yeah.
Do you know what I mean? How sad that is, fact that once they finish sports, it's like...
Their lives fall apart.
Yeah.
And it comes down to the circle of influence. And like Steph mentioned, the circle, what did she say about... She doesn't... Like her friends who she hangs out with, she doesn't like hanging out with groups. And I think that the point of that is... When you're in groups, you tend to have a group mindset and a group mentality, and it's important to be able to identify that, you know, be an individual.
Mm.
Have your own path. Be friends with people. Be a good friend.
And be happy for people.
Support each other.
Yeah.
And sometimes when we're in groups, if we all grew up together and...
Follow the leader.
Yeah, it's just not a good... I've never heard anyone deliver it like she did, but it's super valid.
Yeah, I think she makes some great points and some great takeaway points. The fact that she's... What I really like about Steph, she's not cliche, man. You know what I mean? Like,
she's
got her own thoughts and ideas, and,
but
you know...
How she carries herself, like, her mindset.
It's different. That's
gangster.
Someone from, like, high-level athlete.
I like it.
Like, yeah, she's gangster.
Yeah, like, to have
she's
that...
like that, too, has been called gangster.
For sure, to have that headspace. Like, man, I don't care what... So many people live in this space, and with this advent, this growth, this blow up of social media, so many people worry about what people think about them. But to have her just stand there and say, you know what, I've never struggled with that. And I think that strong mindset, that framework allows her to continually to keep growing, keep creating, and believe in herself. Self-belief
tough,
is huge.
Can you think about, you know, winning gold medals, the world at your feet, and then all of a sudden, you know, like we spoke about, like, is injuries that just happen. It's an everyday part of life. Getting old is a different everyday part of life. And, you know, how you handle winning and losing, failure and success is a big part of it. And to see that, you know, she would have had to sacrifice so much growing up, man. Like, we didn't even get to pretty much touch on the point that pretty much she would have had to sacrifice her whole childhood in terms of, like, you know, me and you, we went out with our friends, you know, we would go out, stay late.
Not me, man. See, once again, I played from the time I was 7 years old. I played football, baseball, basketball year round. Never went on holiday, never went on vacation. So I understand that.
Yeah, and what I mean is into her 20s, though. Like, yeah. I mean, I sacrificed too because I was playing sports when I was younger as well, and I know what that sacrice is like. But, you know, when I was 18.
Oh, yeah, 19, I went savage mode at 19.
We were free to do what we want. Yeah, she was still a monster. She was in the middle of being a world champion, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, for sure. Tough, yeah, you have your man. Shout out to my boys from back in the day. Ohio Avenue days, 19 years old, Justin Smith, Smitty, living in South Florida, man, we were crazy. Yeah, but you know, it's important though to understand and appreciate those times, to learn from the mistakes, and who we are today, me at 34, what she said about hope, I always say that, hope is a beggar, hope is an excuse. The person, there's two people, there's a fire, there's one person who hopes that they don't get burned, and then there's the other person who walks right through that thing.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a mindset. Life is about framework. It's about mental, you know, awareness of where we want to go. It reminds me of a quote. We need to know who we need to become to get to where we want to go.
Yeah.
And it starts with identifying your intent, identifying your strengths, making a plan of attack, believing in yourself.
It's interesting.
You got me hyped right now.
We've created a bit of a book club. That might be a little segue that we might have to bring in now for all our guests. When you think Commando Steve, he was dropping bombs with a book that he read.
Oh, we're sharing books now.
Well. Maybe it's a bit of a book club that we can share people what there they're reading. You know what I mean? And it's funny that the Aussies are taking charge in terms of the book reading. I would have thought it would have been opposite.
Oh, man, no, because you know what's happening too is a lot of it, when you're around these people, like I'm not going to hang out with Steve because we're not friends.
I'm friends with him.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, I'm not in his circle of influence. Not yet, but we think alike. We're like-minded. I think that's the important part. Stephanie's like-minded. And when you're sharing ideas and sharing thoughts and sharing each other, what are you reading and what are you listening to? And things are starting to match up. What I'm reading, what you're reading, and how think about how many times in the last 2 months the name Paulo Coelho has popped up in your life since you started reading.
It happens all the time. It's actually funny now.
You know, and then with her, Eckhart Tolle, for her to be able to send off different titles and things
I
that...
I promise you, I will read that book.
You I'm still have away. My Eckhart
I'm going
Tolle,
away
man.
For 1 week. Yeah. I will finish it on that trip.
Yeah, for sure. TK's getting ready for a trip to Vietnam.
Vietnam for with a week your pops. With family.
That's awesome, man. Cherish those times for sure.
Definitely.
As we were getting ready to interview Steph, me and you both got a message from my childhood best friend's mother, Dee Bank. Dr. D. Banks, beautiful woman, amazing woman, and the message was of love.
Yeah.
And the message said that just to let you know, one of us won't be here, you know, one of us will go before the other. You know, I just want to let you know I love you.
Yeah.
And it's so simple. So I sent that message before Steph came on to my sisters and my mom. And, you know, my phone's been going crazy. I guess it sounds so simple, but how often do we tell the people we care about we love them?
That's true, man.
It's very important. And I guess it's something that you get to experience this trip with your pops. You know, the awareness of these times are special. And they're rare. And we're not here forever.
Yeah, and I think it's why I want to go, just to spend that quality time. And I think it's a fantastic time to unwind and just...
Is your mom going?
Sure, mom's going as well.
Oh, the whole squad?
The whole squad.
Is your sister and brother?
No, they're not going.
Are you the youngest?
No, I'm the middle.
Oh, I never asked you that. I'm the middle too.
I'm the middle.
Yeah, so what's the biggest year? How's the oldest?
Mark, he's 36.
Okay, and you're 34?
Yeah, he's 27.
Okay, so 36, 34, 27.
Got to ride a second time. They have to try for a while.
Yeah, right?
It's an accident.
Two dudes. Oh, the second one. They wanted a girl.
Yeah,
they had the two boys. Like, these dudes are savages. We need a girl.
Get them out of here.
Yeah. For sure, man. This was awesome interviewing her. Like, it was good that just the mindset of a champion. She is an Olympian world record holder, and that's why she does not give one single...
And that's what it's about. You feed off the energy. I'm sure the listeners are all feeding off her energy as well, wanting to plan their little strategies now. Execute, guys. Execute. Let's get after it.
For sure. You know, everyone has a great idea. The difference is the person that we know and the person we'll never hear of is the person who took action.
100%. So, guys, you know... It was a powerful episode, so, you know, the best thing you could do for us is share it with your friends, share it with your family, and let other people experience what Steph has to say. I think she's had some really powerful messages out there, and it'll be great if we can get it to an even bigger audience. Like, we've built a really good audience, but...
From scratch.
Yeah.
I take pride in that.
Let's build it even bigger. And the best way you can help us is just, yeah, share it with your friends, whether it's in a conversation over dinner or on Facebook, Insta, all those little devices.
So, we talked about asking for help. Here's me asking you. Yeah, well, you guys listen at home. If any of you guys are any, you know, experts on social media growth or reach, and you have any ideas, email us at info@divisionboardpodcast.com. If you feel you know, Tristan and I, we're learning on the go. We don't have a team. We are our team. We do the promotion. We do the editing. We do everything. So with each day, if somebody out there is listening, you know, oh, here's an idea to grow the show, or here's an idea to promote the show, we're open to that. Send us an email. Follow me on social media, Johnny Stofko, at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can catch Tristan.
Tristan Cannell Fitness, or just Tristan Cannell, K-N-E-L-L on Facebook.
Yeah, buddy.
All right, guys, another great episode. Remember to subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Please leave us a 5-star review. That would be brilliant. Johnny Stofko, you have a fantastic week. We're back in studio tomorrow, so I'll see your face very soon.
Yeah, let's rock and roll, guys. Thanks for listening and share it. Peace.
All right, guys. See you later.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.